Passage is made possible because of support from people like you, the listener. To find out how you can support Passage, visit patreon.com/passagepodcast. There, you'll find information on our reward levels and what you'll receive for supporting Passage. Some of these rewards include episode transcripts, exclusive audio updates, and even exclusive bonus episodes. That's patreon.com/passagepodcast. We can't make Passage without you. Thank you for your support. On August 20th, 2007, a young girl was walking the beach of Jedediah Island, just off Vancouver Island, when she noticed a size 12 Adidas sneaker lying by itself. Inside the shoe was a sock, and inside that sock was a man's right foot. 6 days later, on nearby Gabriola Island, a couple walking along the beach discovered a size 12 white Reebok sneaker that also contained what was left of a human foot. February 2008, another island in the Strait of Georgia, another sneaker with a human foot inside. May 2008, another. June 2008, another. August 2008, yet another. This time found on the shores of Washington's Olympic Peninsula, not too far from Port Possession. In all, 16 sneakers containing the remains of a human foot have been spotted on the coasts of the Salish Sea, of which Puget Sound and Marrow Passage are included, since 2007. Some of them have been determined to be men's, and others appear to be women's. In two instances, it was determined that a foot found on one beach matched a foot found on a separate beach miles away. Are people chopping off their feet with alarming regularity and throwing them in the water? Are these the remains of bodies washed into the ocean during the 2011 Japan earthquake and tsunami? Is there a serial killer roaming the Pacific Northwest distributing amputated feet as they go? Scientists say that there's a logical explanation. People end up drowning through various means: suicide, natural disaster, accident. Their bodies are set upon by underwater organisms that start breaking them down. One of the thinnest parts of the human body is the joint that connects the foot to the rest of the leg, making it easy for a foot to disarticulate and float away. Since that person was wearing shoes or sneakers, that made it harder for the organisms to get at the fleshy goodness inside, and eventually those foot-filled shoes came ashore via the current. They also have an explanation for why this area is so rife with runaway feet. It's called the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon, otherwise known as frequency illusion. Someone might say the name of a song, and then shortly thereafter you hear that song playing everywhere, or you always seem to notice when the time on the clock is the same numbers as your birthday. That's Bader-Meinhof. Your brain is focused on a particular piece of information, so that information stands out more than it normally would. They think that people started hearing news reports of dislocated feet showing up on Salish Sea and Puget Sound shores, and that in turn made people look for them. And when each new one was found, confirmation bias kicked in and seemed to prove it was true. Of course, if that's true and it's not a phenomenon, that means there are a lot more sneakers with feet inside them washing up on shores around the world than we realize. There are other theories, non-scientific ones, if you're so inclined. Frequency bias or not, no one is reporting random feet appearing on the beaches with regularity in California or New Jersey or Cornwall. For some, there is quite literally something in the water here. This body of water that feeds into a patch known as the Graveyard of the Pacific is, in some ways, cursed. It's the kind of place where ships sink or go missing with alarming regularity. It's the kind of place where a poor lost soul's errant body part will wash ashore with no explanation. It's the kind of place where a lifeboat full of skeletons from a ship that disappeared 150 years ago will magically reappear without reason. So, what do you believe? The logical, rational explanation? Or the ominous theory? Is this all just coincidence? Or is it a warning? I ask because when I arrived here, I was firmly in that first camp. There's an explanation for everything, But after last episode's discovery, I was reminded of something Chip said in our first meeting about the waters around Port Possession.
Skinomish legend said this area was sacred because of the way the two bodies of water met out at the end of town. The strait, bringing in the ocean current, and the passage. They believed the spirits of the water were in a never-ending battle at that point.
And maybe we're all just casualties of that battle. This is Passage. My father died a few years ago. He lived to the age of 61, served his country with honour, had two children, was married for a time, was married again for a time, worked successfully in corporate real estate for many years. Probably could have been a professional golfer had he really gone for it, but in the end he just wanted to live out his days on his boat with his golden retriever. By the time he died, he'd lost most of the connections in his life, except for my sister and I and a few close friends. His funeral was sparsely attended. I remember thinking that, as we scattered his ashes into the sea, it's already as if he never existed. Sure, his children were living proof that he had, but I imagined he was the kind of person who would fade from most people's minds with time. There would be no memorials or fond remembrances or big family get-togethers where everyone sits around talking about how great he was, except for the brief phone call moments where my sister and I recount his funny quirks and catchphrases. There is no other time on this planet when anyone discusses him or thinks of him. That thought makes me unbearably sad. The idea that you could live a life history will not remember. Roger Margarin lived that kind of life. Up until a few weeks ago, I'd bet no one has uttered his name out loud in at least 100 years. A cursory search on the internet uncovered no articles about his disappearance, nor any attempts to find out what happened to him. And had this entire investigation not taken us down a rabbit hole to discover his name, hastily scribbled on some old manifest, he probably would have remained a complete non-entity to the world. To say nothing of the fact that Lacey Gnome blurted out his name just days before. I asked Chip to dig into the archives to see if he can find out anything else about the mysterious Roger Margarin. I'd be over there with him rummaging through old newspaper clips, but today I finally get a chance to have a sit-down with Roger de Bruyn, current mayor of Port Possession, and the great-great-great-great-great-grandson of J.W. himself. The parallel between getting to know this Roger while we try to figure out the old Roger is not lost on me. Before I leave for that meeting, I figured I'd check in with Chip to see if he's found anything.
Nothing.
Seriously?
Seriously. Absolutely nothing. He doesn't show up in census forms. He didn't own land, a house, or a business. Didn't owe anyone money. This guy didn't exist.
I suppose that's not too out of the ordinary, given the times.
Yeah, but you'd think there'd be, I don't know, something. Some sort of proof he existed before the day he disappeared.
So strange.
Very. But I'll keep looking.
Thanks. I'll circle back after my chat with the mayor.
So you're talking to de Bruyn today? Surprised he agreed.
It took some wrangling. It's a bit much. No offense, but it's not like he's the mayor of London.
Don't tell him that. So, what are you going to talk to him about?
Well, I think he's a good person to get perspective from about Port Possession and how it's dealing with the Cumberland News resurgence. Also, as a de Bruyn, he seems like a good source to tie in the things we've been looking into about the history of the town.
Ask him about Shanghai.
Shanghai?
Yeah, if he wants to talk about the history of the town, I think that should come up.
What about Shanghai?
Oh, I'll let de Bruyn explain.
With that random reference left dangling, I made my way to Port Possession City Hall for my sit-down with the mayor.
Have a seat, Ms. Bonham. I assume Alicia offered you coffee or something?
Yes, she did. Thank you. And thank you for taking the time.
Well, don't thank me yet. I'm only doing this because my niece listens to your podcast and gives me the play-by-play. Sounded like someone needed to get involved to clear up some inaccuracies.
Oh, okay. In another life and another town, Roger De Bruyn would have been president of a mid-market regional paper supply company, or something like that. According to his bio on the town website, he's 52. And if you saw him, you'd probably say, that's a guy who looks like he's 52. Along with the name, he also got J.W. De Bruyn's hairline. Bald up top, graying tufts on each side. He wears glasses, but his deep brown eyes can stare a hole through you if he wants them to. Is there something in particular you want to clear up?
Well, first of all, let me just say, there are other people in this town besides Chip Kuznick. He might be our unofficial town historian and all that, but there are plenty of people with much deeper roots and stronger ties to this community.
You seem to have an issue with Chip Kuznick.
I do.
I suppose I'm not surprised, as the feeling appears to be mutual.
I'm sure it does.
So, is there something Chip said that was incorrect? I've been fact-checking.
Look, you can try to decipher a bunch of documents and filter the stories through the lens of modernity, but J.W. De Bruyn was no criminal or boogeyman or whatever you've been insinuating.
I don't think I insinuated.
Point being, port possession is like any other town that came about in those days. There were good things and there were bad things. I don't understand why we need to dredge up the negatives and rehash them like we're proving some kind of point about how we're better people now.
I understand your concern, but I feel like we simply recounted history.
To fit Mr. Kuznick's narrative, things were a bit more nuanced than J.W. showed up, ran the natives out, and became some kind of power-crazed timber baron. That's the story that makes people like Kuznick feel better about this version of society we've created now, but it's absurd. People were people then, people are people now.
What would you add to the story that we haven't discussed about the history of the town?
Like I said, I haven't listened to your show, but I'm going to guess there's no mention of the fact that Port Possession eventually had Washington's first female mayor, that for a time it was the territory's busiest port, and all told, the founding families of this town have given millions back to the community over the years.
Well, consider all of those things noted.
You know, big things are coming to Port Possession. Home Depot is considering setting up shop on the edge of town. We're in talks with a couple of the big movie theater chains and a few mall developers. We should even have our very first Starbucks in the next month or two.
The ultimate sign that an American town is going places.
Now, you may make fun, but in some ways it is. Some of the biggest names in the business are looking to Port Possession, and they like what they see. This lifeboat thing, I appreciate that it's put a spotlight on our town. I just wish it would have waited a couple of months until we've grown a bit.
Excuse me if I'm channeling Chip Kuznick here, but is that really a good thing for a town like Port Possession to become just another Home Depot and Starbucks community?
No, you're right. That does sound a lot like something Kuznick would ask. I'll tell you the same thing I tell him at every council meeting. Small American towns like Port Possession are like sharks. You move forward or you die. Now, there's a handful out there that can survive as sleepy little communities, and that's great for them. But we're too far removed from the rest of the country out here to get by in a reputation from the 19th century. There was a time people had a reason to come to Port Possession, but those days are over now. If we want this town to survive, we need to be proactive, and that means making it the kind of place where people can survive. If that means $5 lattes, so be it.
What does that mean for the economy of Port Possession, though?
Did I misunderstand the point of your radio show? I thought it was about the Cumberland.
It is. I mean, it's about the lifeboat. But Port Possession is a big part of that story. I can't help but feel like there's something to the fact that it appeared now off your shores.
Yeah, it's called the tide. Look, sweetheart, this isn't a council meeting, and you're not with the local paper, so I don't need to get into our town's economy. What I'll say is that when my ancestors and the ancestors of many of the people on the city council today came here, they did what they had to do to survive and build a town. That's what the DeBruins and the Berries and the McLeods and all the good people of Port Possession have been doing for over 150 years. And it's what we're doing today. If I knew a bunch of dead people were going to show up in a boat every week and draw the attention of the world, I wouldn't have to do anything. But they won't, and people are already starting to forget about us. So it's up to us, up to me, to make sure Port Possession is still here 150 years from now.
With that, we exchanged pleasantries, though I don't know if that's the right word. This sweetheart started packing up her things and was about to leave when I remembered something. One last thing. What can you tell me about Shanghai?
What did you say?
I was told to ask you about Shanghai.
Get the hell out of my office. What is this, a joke?
What is it about Shanghai? I don't understand.
It's made up bullshit nonsense. And I swear to God, if you don't cut this part out of your little show, I will come after you.
All due respect, sir, you agreed to be on the record, and I plan to find out what's going on.
And with all due respect, screw you.
And with that, I walked out the door, traded a knowing glance with Alicia, and got on my way. I assumed when Chip told me to ask about Shanghai, he was playing some kind of joke on me, or trying to get a rise out of DeBruin. I had no idea the mere mention of the place would elicit that. Honestly, I'm not even sure if this has anything to do with the Cumberland at this point, but there's no way I was going to leave that thread dangling. I was on my way back to the local drip to seek answers, when answers came walking right up to me.
Excuse me?
Yes?
Are you the reporter?
Well, I'm a reporter, but I can't claim to be the reporter.
I mean about the lifeboat, with the podcast.
Yes, that's me. You are?
Linda Melson Blaine. I was hoping to run into you.
Linda Melson Blaine's name might sound familiar. At least one of her last names might. The Blaines are one of the town's founding families and have had someone in the city government ever since. Linda is the latest clan representative, currently sitting on the city council. She looks like the kind of woman you'd expect to be on the city council, if that makes sense. She has a regality to her that can keep you at a distance, but couples it with a down-to-earth smile that puts you at ease when she needs to. Willowy, with kind eyes, but I don't think I'd mess with her. Linda and I walked from the town hall along the waterfront. As she put it, it might be good to put a little distance between us and the mayor's office.
I've listened to the podcast. It's very interesting.
Interesting, huh?
I mean, it's very good. I'm not sure what that woman with the visions has to do with all of this, but...
You and me both. So...
I saw that you met with our distinguished mayor. How did that go?
He basically accused me of besmirching the good name of Port Possession and kicked me out of his office.
Yep, that sounds like Roger. He's all wound up with this weight of the world on his shoulders, and that was before this whole Cumberland skeleton thing.
Anything you care to share on that front?
Oh, no. Come to me if you want to talk about the town budget, land use, or the Port Possession high school football team. Anything else in this world, I'm out of the loop. Especially dead people floating in the passage.
You said the mayor was already on edge before this happened.
Changes are coming to Port Possession.
He mentioned lots of big businesses moving into town.
Yep, and big businesses tend to have an effect on small businesses, which this town is full of. The last few city council meetings have not been among the most pleasant of my tenure.
So, if it's causing so much friction, why do it? Why risk putting so many locals out to make room for corporations?
Look around. What choice do we have? You've been here for a few days now, right? I mean, See how many people are walking the streets, shopping in our stores, eating in our restaurants. Not that many. And this is an uptick because of all this skeleton nonsense. Normally it's even sleepier. I love this town. I grew up here. I married my high school sweetheart. My children go to the same schools we went to. I've started businesses here. I'm part of the local government. And I'm sure I'll probably die here one day. So don't get me wrong and think I'm against poor possession or something, but this town is dying, Daisy. I don't care if you quote me on that. It's true. I've seen the numbers, and I've seen the forecasts. Years of fostering this whole quaint little seaside port town thing makes for great Instagram photos, but it doesn't keep the lights on. So if you're telling me the only way Port Possession will still be here when my children are my age is by letting some corporations move in and make their bucks, so be it. One thing I've learned is that life keeps moving and your only hope is to keep moving with it.
The mayor said towns like this are like a shark.
They swim or they die. Yeah, I've heard that one a million times. I guess I agree with him these days. And I say all of this not to be doom and gloom, but just so you know where he's coming from.
That seems fair enough. But there's something else that came up during our meeting that left me a bit puzzled.
What's that?
Shanghai.
Well, shit. Who told you?
Well, I don't really want to...
That's okay. You don't have to tell me. It was Chip Kuznick.
That obvious.
Chip's a good man. He's one of the few people in recent years who moved here and actually decided to put down roots, so we appreciate that. But that man is a pain in the ass at city council meetings. He's become the de facto leader of the local business interest and, well, he's made it clear how much he doesn't like the idea of all these changes.
He likes to say, this is a good town.
Full of good people, it should stay that way. Yes, I've heard that one too.
You disagree.
We agree on the two first parts. We disagree on the feasibility of the third. I'm sure a good reporter like you is going to find out anyway, so we might as well get into Shanghai.
Please.
Well, first of all, Shanghai isn't referencing the place. It's referencing the act.
The act of Shanghai.
Shanghaiing.
You've lost me already.
You see that old building over there with the faded writing on the side?
Mm-hmm. Linda pointed to a big brick rectangle at the end of a row of old buildings away from the piers. Based on the way the windows were in various states of openness and the way the ground around it was covered in trash, I figured it wasn't exactly the pride of the town these days.
We call that the Maxwell Building, but its original name was Sailor's Home. It was a boarding house for sailors who were docked here between runs.
Runs to where?
You name it. Alaska, California, Asia, Australia, everywhere in between. The boarding house was run by a man named Levi Maxwell. He came to Port Possession from San Francisco. He made quite a bit of money running that place, but oh, it was a beauty in its day. You just have to trust me on that. The sailors would dock and set up shop there before heading out to gamble and drink and, well, do all sorts of other things, but they'd eventually run out of money. Maxwell would cover their debts in exchange for a cut of their salary when the next ship arrived.
Sounds somewhat shady, but not exactly terrible.
No, but when demand for sailors didn't match the available debtors Maxwell had on hand, that's when he started shanghaiing. A sailor would show up at the boarding house. They'd start feeding him drinks, making sure to include some concoction that would knock him out. Then they'd load the sailor onto a skiff, row him out to a waiting ship, and by the time he woke up, he was already on the Pacific Ocean with no choice but to work.
Like a slave?
More or less. Maxwell had a whole team of runners who would handle the sailors. Sometimes, if they had a quota they needed to meet, they got creative. Just beat men up who they would come across and drag them onto ships.
Well, that's awful.
Well, it truly was. Sometimes, if a ship was full of Shanghai sailors, the captain would pick one up and throw them overboard just to scare the rest of them into line. Victims were lucky if they survived the voyage and were allowed to even leave the ship, more often than not, they were never heard from again.
When was this?
Oh, this was all the way through the 1860s, right into the turn of the century. But Maxwell's business was truly booming back in the early days when there were no rules and no one to stop him.
Why didn't J.W. De Bruyn stop him?
How do you think Maxwell was able to keep this up for so long? He was paying De Bruyn off to look the other way. When De Bruyn passed a law saying that anyone who boards a ship must do so of their own free will, it was all for show. So those territory officials could feel good about giving port possession contracts and building that railway. But De Bruyn was taking his cut the entire time. All the founding families were.
And that's why Roger De Bruyn doesn't want me to talk about this.
Because the rosy picture of port possession pulling itself up by its bootstraps isn't quite as rosy as we'd like to make it out to be.
So why are you telling me this? Your ancestors were part of it.
I don't see the point of trying to hide it. And I don't see the point of trying to pretend they were better people then. They were awful. The things our ancestors did to the natives to take this land, unconscionable. The things they did to their fellow settlers to get rich, inhumane. You don't get to wash that away.
Whatever happened to Maxwell?
Oh, well, you'll like this. You'd have thought one of those poor men he shanghaied would have shown up again to get revenge. But he actually lived a long life. Sometime around the 1890s, the business was finally drying up, and he decided to go back to San Francisco. The ship he was on sank off the coast of Oregon. A few of the sailors made it out alive, but he was presumed dead. They never found the body. I don't like to wish ill on anyone, but I'd say it's a fair enough fate for that man.
Just like the Cumberland.
What's that?
His ship sank in the graveyard of the Pacific, just like the Cumberland.
Just like a lot of ships in those days.
Linda and I walked a bit more until we reached the local drip, at which point she conveniently had someplace else to be, and I went inside to see what Chip might have uncovered regarding Roger Margarin.
I found something.
You're kidding.
This guy's a ghost, right? No birth certificate, no taxes, no nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I started thinking, what if that's the point? What if this guy is trying really hard not to exist?
Why would you do that?
Because you're doing something that you don't want people to know about.
Like shanghaiing.
So the honorable mayor told you?
Actually, it was honorable city councilperson Melson Blaine.
Oh, interesting. Of all of them, I dislike her the least.
I'm really starting to feel the love in port possession. So, yeah, she filled me in on Levi Maxwell and his so-called business. But whatever, what did you find?
Well, I decided to take my own advice and do some digging into Maxwell's operation.
There are records?
Oh, Maxwell kept very good records. Probably better records than the town.
Cocky bastard.
Tell me about it. So, I was going through the 1865 ledger, and here.
On a list of pay stubs, there were seven names, seven men who, presumably, made up Maxwell's crew of shanghaiers. The very last name on the list, scribbled in faded ink, was the name Roger Margarin. So here's what we now know. Roger Margarin came to port possession in its infancy. By 1865, he was working on the docks helping ships load and unload, which makes sense as his other job appeared to be helping the notorious Levi Maxwell, Shanghai sailors, out to sea. A year later, in 1866, he climbed aboard the SS Cumberland as a late replacement and disappeared with the ship. 150 years later, an intrepid and beautiful reporter comes to port possession, runs into a woman on a ferry having some kind of vision, in which she thinks she is seeing Roger when she is in fact seeing said reporter. Got that? On one hand, I feel like we're getting somewhere. On the other hand, I feel like that somewhere has nothing to do with the Cumberland lifeboat. I want to dig deeper into the life of Roger Margerin, but I wasn't sure what that would do for me or this investigation. Then, as things tend to do in port possession, something happened. So, can I ask you a question?
Shoot.
You knew all about this Levi Maxwell and the Shanghaiing and the things settlers did to the natives who lived here. Why do you keep saying this is a good town? The more I learn about it, the more that doesn't seem true.
Port possession isn't the problem. Port possession has never been the problem. It's those people, those families.
The Debruns.
And the Blaines, and the McLeods, and the Berries. What does everything bad that's ever happened here have in common? All of them.
Easy there. You sound a bit obsessive.
Well, I just really appreciate this place, you know? It's the first real place I've been able to call home since...
Sorry, one sec. Hello?
Daisy?
Yes. Who is this?
It's Lacey. Lacey Gnome.
Hi, Lacey. I was actually going to call you.
I understand it now.
You understand what now?
I understand the visions. I see what they mean. Who Roger was, who I was.
I'm not following you.
I met Sholitza.
Sho-who-za?
Sholitza, Princess of the Skinomish.
The Native American woman who disappeared in the 1860s. You met her.
I did.
Okay, Lacey, I think maybe...
Don't you get it? I met her.
How did you meet a Native American woman who's been dead for 150 years?
Because she's me.
What?
I mean, I'm her. I mean, it's complicated, but it's not. I was her, and now I'm me, and my visions are what she saw, what she is trying to tell us.
Okay.
You've got to believe me.
So, if you're Sholitza, who's Roger Margerin?
Daisy, you are.